Hierarchy of language. So, what is this next step in the hierarchy of language created through the science of general linguistics? Well, it is a hierarchy of a highly preferred reflection through language, opposing the lower strata of a preferred uncharted nebula of chaos, which is called feelings. These infamous plurals that refuse to be caught in the bottleneck of words. The arbitrary nature of the sign, seen as the concept which is born from the opposition between felt chaotic nature versus rational reflective culture, has little to do with the thing which is named. Instead, the arbitrariness of the sign is exactly the concept which enables us to juggle with intentionality, while at the same time it creates the dark side that is called subconscious, silence, or the occult. It is truly a wonderful concept, as it is in the midst of its hierarchizing function, arbitrary nature of the sign poses off as an intermediate that implicates the principle of equalizing concepts. One phoneme can be replaced by another, if we say so, or if time allows for it, because it is not important which sound has been connected to what concept. In fact, the arbitrary nature of the sign tells us that all sounds are equal, though some sounds are a bit more equal than others. It is in fact the concept of the arbitrariness of signs itself which prevents language and speech to escape the reductive capacity of the concept. In this sense, linguistics has become just as functional as writing, which you call not a guise but a disguise, as linguistics too is representation. It also makes semiology a task for the psychologist, as you mentioned. However, contrary to your opinion, I do not think that semiology is a psychological task because of the conceptual nature between the signifier and the signified. Rather, the psychological task is it increases the disembodiment of language as an individual concerns towards a conceptual case that semiology has become and therefore supports the pre-existing faculties of linguistics. Instead of the sound being the mediator, as Herder once proposed, it is rather the psychologist or the linguist who has become the mediator. The concept of arbitrariness itself thus allows for speculation in originary thinking. It is rather more clever than true. I cannot but conclude that the arbitrariness of the signs is basically never situated between the sensorium and the phoneme, but between the sign and its rationality. In terms of feeling, the tone might make perfect sense. It could indeed be a differentiation that explains the word. It could equally be that, like the perfect tones of violins of Stradivarius, the feeling and its tone were created in the privacy of the bedroom, in which case we will never retrieve it, bless censorship. In both cases, the result is the word that explains the difference, and not the difference that explains the word. In fact, the category is arbitrary and not the signs. To take it one step further, it does not matter so much whether children, primitives, or animals are viewed as pre-linguistic or pre-self, neither whether gods are viewed as supernatural. The categories by which at least one discriminatory category is maintained is fully arbitrary, as long as it maintains the hierarchy of reflection and enlightenment. This is why Herder needed to disconnect human language from the language of animals, and Susmilch needed human language to come from God, and you need human language to be separated from chaos, animals, and children. However, Ferdinand, these descriptions of the hierarchic capacity of language philosophy might have shocked you. Or maybe it did not. I don't know, honestly. My first intention here is to point out that there can be no linguistic which, in spite of abandoning of the quest for the origin of language, becomes a separate and ahistorical, unconditioned science. In fact, individual bodies have more of a chance to experience such freedom than linguistics will ever reflect. It is not a coincidence that linguistics and psychology experienced such a hype in the academic establishment at the beginning of this former century. They are very much part of the monetary principle that dominated modern capitalism. On the surface, this does not seem so obvious. It is, however, important to realize that the arbitrary nature of the sign also implicates the principle of equalizing exchange of signs as a ground root principle, a sort of pre-existing economy of monetary signs. In fact, you gave an excellent metaphor of the modern capitalist monetary system when you describe the arbitrary nature of the signs explains in turns why the social fact alone can create a linguistic system. The community is necessary if values that owe their existence solely to the usage and general acceptance are to be set up. By himself, the individual is incapable of fixing a single value. Yep. Words are not abstractions evermore. Neither is money, indeed. We must set both feet on the ground and firmly recognize that they are a reality, goods which have a value in a system of exchange. It is not surprising at this point that the principles of the modern capitalist monetary system too coincide with rationality. In fact, it might even be said that rationality made capitalism possible, rather than the other way around. The origin of language here presents itself as a pre-existing system of rational values, which underlay the community and the economy. And to ease the pain, you might feel happy to know that it has been just a matter of time before this principle returned in the shape of a study of the originary event, which is a pledge to generative anthropology. Recently, Eric Gans wrote a book that explains it all from a modern point of view, that of originary thinking. And I say this with slight sarcasm.